Hey friendos, it's Danny B, and welcome to the first episode of my podcast, Retrostalgia, a critical analysis of every book, TV show, movie, and game that I've always been told I had to... whatever. Before we get started today, a little bit about me. My name is Danny B. I'm from Kentucky. I am a proud millennial, and you may be asking yourselves, what is Retrostalgia? Retrostalgia is basically just a term that I came across on Urban Dictionary, actually, which is basically a nostalgia for things that you weren't really alive for. So, me myself, I was born in 94, so I could have retrostalgia for anything that was made or produced in, like, the 80s or 70s. Or, really, you could even go so far back as, like, the Victorian age or Roman times or whatever, that sort of thing. You could even say it's almost kind of like when people equate the feeling of nostalgia to like wishing that they had been born in a different time period. Like some people wish they had been born in the 50s. As horrible as a time that was, people just feel nostalgic for that time, mainly because of the style of dress and maybe even some of the ethics, but more or less they wish that they could live during that time period for one reason or another. So what does that have to do with me? What I'm here today and moving forward to do is to watch all the TV shows, see all the movies, play all the video games, and read all the books that people have always told me my entire life that I needed to see or read or watch or do or whatever. And basically, I'm going to give you my honest opinion and be a bitch about it and tell you if it sucks. You know, it might ruin your childhood, as like some people say, but you know what? It's my opinion, and if you don't like it, then you don't have to listen to this. You can go find some other nostalgic podcast to listen to. But if that sounds cool, and you're up for hearing me bitch about movies and TV shows and video games and stuff, then stick around, because today I'm going to be talking about The Dark Crystal. The Dark Crystal was a movie that came out in 1982, a good 12 years before I was even born, which just goes to show how relevant it still is. This movie was directed by Jim Henson and Frank Oz. But as much as I appreciate everything that Jim Henson has brought into the world, I still kind of have to shit on his movie, The Dark Crystal. This movie begins with narration, which is a very classic trope to tell a story and to give background to a movie or a TV show or some sort of scenery in which we don't have the actual background. From there, we get introduced to the two types of creatures, which are the main source of conflict in the movie, the Skaxis and the Mystics, which are both just like really old and wrinkly and just odd creatures that you don't really know what they're supposed to be, and they look like they probably don't know what they're supposed to be either, honestly. But we start in, and they're in the middle of this sun ceremony or whatever. And there's a bunch of bright lights and shit, and then we're introduced to the opening credits. And you all remember a time when every fucking movie began with an opening credit scene that lasted like 2 whole minutes. And that's when you would get up and realize that, oh shit, I forgot a drink, or I need to go pee. And so you'd go and grab something, and by the time you came back, then the opening credits would be done, and the camera would be done panoramaing over the entire set and everything. Oh, and by the way, as it turns out, everyone is dying, like literally everyone, and we get to see the oldest of the Mystics die, and as he dies, unlike when the oldest of the Skaxis dies, the oldest of the Mystics is basically alone, except for our main character, Jen, who is just sitting there with him as he's dying, being very, like... He really just couldn't give a single shit about the fact that this dude is dying. He's like, no, master, please don't go. No, please don't. And all the while, you have to look at his just terrible, unnaturally smooth face, and it just seems so like unemotional. There's no tugging of the heartstrings or anything. It's just a very flat moment, and like I really just didn't care that his elder was dying. It was just such a low point. And then we find out that, of course, our main character is the Chosen One, and he is the Chosen One because he is not only an orphan, but he's also the last of his kind, or at least at this point in the movie, we do think he's the last of his kind. And then he gets told that his duty is basically to become Knuckles the Echidna, and he has to find the crystal shard, which conveniently this lady called Agra has the shard, so like, good for him. He doesn't really need to find it, he just needs to find her. And he's told this with little to no direction as to where he has to go. He just has to magically find this lady, and I guess she'll give him the crystal or something like that. As well as this is all told to him through the very classic a la Dumbledore trope of, I should have told you this long ago. And as I said before, Jin is not fazed by this at all. This is all being told to him by his master as he's dying, by the way. This is all happening before his master dies. And he just doesn't give a shit that he's just been handed this, like, ultimate destiny and all that jazz. Right before his master dies, he learns all of this and doesn't shed a single tear for this dude. Which I think is fine, because honestly, if your master is someone who hides shit for a long time and then only tells you with his dying breath, then I imagine you also wouldn't be too upset about it when he kicks the bucket. But after that happens, we keep getting this back and forth between the two groups, which clearly shows the good versus evil that they're really trying to instill in you for this story, including the bad dudes like fighting over who gets to be the new emperor, and then the current emperor being all Gollum when someone tries to take his scepter and he's like, no, it's mine still, I'm still emperor. And then he dies, and there's this whole trial by stone where these two dudes are literally whacking a stone with swords to see who can cut it, because that's the correct way to choose your new ruler. But the Chamberlain loses, and the other guy gets to be the new ruler, and the crystal basically sounds like a toy laser gun here. Like, I don't know how they created the sound effects for this part, but the crystal literally sounds like something I could find in the toy aisle of my local dollar store and give to a small child to play with. Then we go back to Jen, who is on his way to find this witch, and as he is trying to find her, he's like talking to himself inside of his own head, which I can only assume that he's not talking out loud like most people would during a movie, for the simple fact that when he talks, it looks like a puppet. It looks terrible. His mouth barely moves, if you can even call it that. But he does eventually come across the witch, and her workshop is really fucking cool. She's got this giant planetary thing in the middle that just continuously rotates, and it kind of reminded me of that one scene in The Tomb Raider. But that's an entirely different movie. Anyways, while Jen is here trying to figure out where the crystal shard is, this bitch keeps talking at him like he's asking her a million questions. And honestly, he's like maybe asked her three. And she just keeps repeating, too many questions, too many questions. You ask me too many questions. But in reality, she's talking so much that he can't even get a word in edgewise. But she does eventually give him some of the crystals that she has, but he has to figure out which one is the actual crystal shard to the dark crystal, and he does so by playing his weird little two-ended flute, and it glows or whatever, because of course, you know, whenever I'm looking for crystal shards, I always carry around my flute and just play this melody that's, I guess, some sort of melody that the crystal knows or something. Whatever. Anyways, shortly after this happens, Agra's workshop is attacked by these giant beetle-like things that remind me of something from Fallout. And as they're being attacked, Jen runs away by climbing up on top of the planetarium like a little bitch. Like, is he really that girl in every scary movie who runs upstairs in an attempt to run away? But I guess it's fine, because there's a window and he, like, jumps out of it. And then he just keeps going through the wilderness, and eventually he comes across another Gelfling who, of course, is a girl, because, you know, every movie, especially movies during this time period, everyone has to have a love interest. And he gets introduced to her while he's in the mud, and it's really embarrassing for him. And then they touch hands and share all their memories, and it's very strange. But she rescues him out of the mud, and you get to meet Fizzgig, which is her adorable otherworldly Pomeranian. And honestly, the best part of this entire movie is Fizzgig. Like, I don't care that he has some weird second set of teeth. He is adorable, and you can't talk to him. He is my son, and I will protect him forever. There is an eating scene at the Dark Castle that goes on for way too long and introduces, like, burping gags and weird digestive noises. I really don't know how to describe it. And somehow they realized that the creatures that they sent to capture Jen didn't actually get him. Then 2 seconds later, the creatures show up and they're like, oh hey, they have the Gelfling. But it turns out they captured Agra, and, like, how did they confuse her for Jen, even though they were just talking about how Jen escaped? It really didn't make sense and was really confusing, unless, of course, I just misunderstood what was going on. But I'm fairly certain in about 10 seconds it went from them discussing how he escaped to the creature showing up and them thinking that the creatures had him, even though they were just discussing how he had escaped. But then they send the creatures back out after him, and we go back to the Mystics, and the Mystics are on their way to the Dark Castle, and these creatures are old as hell and walk so slowly. I think they'll be dead before they even get to the Dark Castle. I just don't understand how they end up making it there before the end of the movie, but somehow at some point they just, like, start booking it, I guess. Who knows? Then we get to the traditional, like, party scene where Kira's adoptive kind are partying and just, like, having a grand old time. And it doesn't seem like they're celebrating or anything, but it just seems like they're, you know, like it's another Wednesday night or something for them. The party gets interrupted and they find out about the prophecy and they escape, and Kira knows all of the animal calls ever. I think throughout this movie she calls, like, 3 different types of animals and they just, like, show up. Fucking Fizzgig throws a hissy fit about not being able to go with them to the Dark Castle to try and figure shit out. So Kira gives in and lets him go. And then we get to see Kira's Ken that they captured. They're going to try and drain their living essence with the Dark Crystal. And the guy just starts explaining how it works to these creatures as if they're an audience member, and they just, like, it's so fascinating that they really want to know what's about to happen to them before they essentially die. Like, their bodies aren't dying, but it's like they got kissed by a Dementor. Like, their soul's basically gone. They're just, like, mindless zombies, more or less. Except it doesn't really work. Like, he does end up taking their living essence, but when the Emperor tries to drink it to regain his youth and be more immortal, it just, like, comes back. So, sucks for them. Kira and Jen run into some more trouble, and apparently Kira has wings or something, because only girl Gelflings have wings. I think it was just added in to try and give them some sort of way to escape from the creatures that were going after them. It really didn't make sense. And then they sneak into the castle, and as they're sneaking in, they get attacked again, and Jen fucking stabs the Chamberlain with the crystal shard. Like, that's fucking dope. But then all of a sudden, this stab mark shows up on one of the mystics, and he's just not bothered by it at all. He's just like, oh yes, of course, my hand is bleeding. Like, this happens every day or something. And then the guy goes back to the court to try and get back in, and he brings Kira with him. The court basically starts freaking out. They're like, oh, there's a Gelfling in the castle. Very much like Professor Quirrell in Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone. There's a troll in the dungeon. Then you sort of try and piece things together. It kind of starts making sense that the good and the bad guys maybe used to be like one entity that got split into two races for some reason because the crystal broke, which I don't think we ever actually find out how or why the crystal broke, or if we do, I honestly just don't remember. It probably was barely mentioned, if anything. And then Jen and Kira are trying to get the crystal shard back in the dark crystal, and there's a whole scuffle and everything. And then Fizgig fucking dies. Kira fucking dies. And Jen somehow manages to heal the crystal, and everyone else starts freaking the fuck out. However, Jen is just... he's sitting there because he has the emotional range of a teaspoon. Fizgig comes back. He's not dead. Haha. And the dark crystal restores the castle to the way that it was before. And it's this nice, like, pretty, like, crystal castle. Like, ooh. And then everyone, like, merges into these, like, ghostly, otherworldly creatures. The green screen here is just absolutely horrible. And then Kira comes back somehow, just like the power of Jen and the crystal brings Kira back, because of course you can't actually kill off the main character's love interest if she is the last of their kind. The new ghostly creatures basically tell Jen, like, okay, here, you can have the dark crystal, you can have this giant palace, now go make babies. And then they peace the fuck out, and that's basically the end of the movie. The credits are very boring, except sometimes they're, like, dramatic as fuck, with this, like, intense music that goes on in some parts of it, then it becomes very boring again. Now, as you may or may not know, Netflix has actually made a TV series based off of this movie. It's a prequel to The Dark Crystal. I've seen the trailer. I've seen the, like, Netflix explains it all about the TV show. And it actually looks really good. I like that they went total puppet with it. They didn't do CGI or anything. They kept true to the way this movie was done. I think that the new show is going to be really good, actually. I'm excited to watch it, and I think I will watch it at least a few episodes to see if I like where the story is going. But I'm really glad that they made it a prequel and not a sequel, because the way the movie ended, I think it ended, you know, they solved the problem. It's good. I don't want to know how and if Jen and Kira have babies and remake the Gelfling population if they do, or if they don't and they just end up dying out. Like, I think there's no real way for the story to have progressed further from that point. So thankfully it ended there, and Netflix decided to have their own story before the events of the Dark Crystal. Which makes sense, because between the time that the Dark Crystal broke and the time that the Dark Crystal movie takes place, there's like a 1,000-year gap where anything could happen. And so they decided to have the show take place during a time in which the Gelflings are still around. They're still a race. Unfortunately, because it's a prequel, we know what's going to happen to everyone. We know that they're all eventually going to die. That most of them, I'm assuming, or at least a lot of them, are going to end up becoming the weird, soulless slaves that are in the Dark Castle who serve the Skeksis. Yeah, so most of the Gelflings are going to end up having their living essence taken from them, or just killed, because they're all scared of the prophecy of a chosen Gelfling destroying everything by putting the crystal back together. which is a weird prophecy for me, because they all make it out like it's this bad thing that's going to happen. And I guess in a way it could be construed as a bad thing that's going to happen because their race is going to be ending once the prophecy comes true. However, the prophecy comes true, peace is restored, and they're all fine. Like, I'm not sure if when the creatures merged back together, if everyone died or not. They didn't really explicitly say what happened, but, you know, they're all standing there in a circle, and someone just took the transparency slider on their lair and just lowered it until they left. So maybe they're ghosts now, maybe they died, who knows, maybe they're just some otherworldly beings that can leave and come as they wish, who knows. Overall, though, I would say the movie didn't age too terribly. The practical effects aren't that bad, aside from Jen and Kira. I think they're honestly probably the worst puppets in this movie, just because they're so uncanny valley looking, I guess. Everything else is just very detailed and really, like, interesting to look at. Like, every other creature is just cool. Like, even Fizzgig, although he's clearly some otherworldly Pomeranian, he opens his mouth and, like, his entire front half of his body opens up, and you can see inside of his mouth, and you can see that he has a, like, recessed second set of teeth back by his uvula. And I think even that is more interesting than how they made the Gelflings appear in this movie. At the end of the day, though, whenever I've told someone that I've never seen The Dark Crystal, they always tell me that it's really good, that if I liked Labyrinth, I would like this movie. Honestly, it wasn't a terrible movie, but I think that there is a lot of this world that isn't known. It's not explained very well in this movie, and I have absolutely no feelings for Jen because he just has no emotional range throughout the entire movie. There are some parts where he appears to cry, but other than that, he doesn't really emote well, and even then, it's like someone just, like, placed tears on his face. It's not very good. He doesn't seem genuinely sad for any of those times that happens. As far as it goes, though, I would say it's definitely worth a watch. I don't understand how it could be, like, someone's favorite movie or anything like that, but it's something that you could definitely see. And if you are planning on watching the Netflix series, The Dark Crystal, then I would suggest watching this movie first so that you have the original version of this world. You can see the original content and the inspiration behind the Netflix adaptation. It's definitely worth at least one watch in your life. And now that I've covered The Dark Crystal, a movie that I've always been told that I need to watch, I'm now going to suggest to you a movie that I think you need to watch, which you don't have to if you don't want to, but it's just a suggestion. I believe, as I sort of mentioned earlier, a lot of people who have seen The Dark Crystal also relate it to Labyrinth. And even if you pull up The Dark Crystal on IMDb, it's like, oh, you might also like The Labyrinth. And so I would suggest watching The Labyrinth if you're looking for some movie that's, like, mystical and just sort of a little otherworldly and also has puppets and stuff. I think that the story of Labyrinth is quite creative. I think that the main character, Sarah, is very relatable. And of course, David Bowie with his glitter and his fushigi balls, not to mention his hair. But yeah, there's catchy songs in it. There's good puppetry. There's terrible green screen. But other than that, I think it's a pretty well-rounded movie. And if you like The Dark Crystal and haven't seen Labyrinth, then I would suggest watching that. And that concludes my first episode of Retrostalgia. If you like that, or if you hated it, you know what to do. You can leave me a review on iTunes, or you can contact me. I am on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram as RetrostalgiaPod. I don't really do Facebook all that much. It'll mostly be posting on Twitter and Instagram, because although I am a millennial, I am quite unfamiliar with Facebook, as I don't actually have a personal one. But if you want to contact me, you can find me there, or you can email me directly at retrosalgiapod@gmail.com. That is retrosalgiapod@gmail.com. Thank you very much for listening, and I hope you have a wonderful day.